Welcome back to Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. I'm Amber Khan. We've been talking about a monk who travels the world to preserve the sacred texts of many cultures by digitizing them. It's high tech. Now we're going to go low tech with Rabbi Moshe Druin.
To write an entire Torah takes approximately 12 months of writing. And we're talking about writing 8, 10, sometimes 12 hours a day. And that's after the practice and training of at least 3-4 years.
That's Rabbi Moshe Druin. Rabbi Druin is a scribe, a person trained to copy the Hebrew Bible or Torah. If you're picturing a man bent over a book, think again. A Torah is not a book. It's a scroll of parchment that is ritually carried, read from, dressed in ornate cloth and silver, and sometimes danced with. When it can no longer be used, it is respectfully buried in a cemetery. The reading from the Torah scroll is the heart of Jewish religious services. The people in the pews may follow along in printed copies in book form, either in Hebrew or translations. But the voice heard in synagogue is reading from the Torah scroll itself, Hebrew words that are exact copies of the original. Rabbi Druin described Moses as the first scribe, or sofer, writing down God's words at Mount Sinai more than 3,000 years ago. But what about sofers today? I asked Rabbi Druin, how did he become one?
I think when I was about 7 or 8 years old, I grew up in Israel, and not really observant at that time, but I came by a sheet of the Hebrew letters in the font, the script of a Torah. And being somewhat of an artist even early on in those days, I fell in love with those letters. And while everyone in the classroom was scribbling scribbles, I was scribbling Hebrew letters. And it was only many years later when I got a little bit more involved in my Judaism, and I was now in yeshiva, and I was a cartoonist, and I was drawing funny faces and pictures of the rabbis and teachers, and got kicked out a few times. You know, but they said to me, Moshe, you should be the ultimate Jewish artist. Forget about these little scribbles you're playing around with. You should become a scribe. I said, oh, you got to really be special to do that. And I dipped myself into it, and I was a fish in water, and I became a scribe very quickly. Very early on. I started to train as a scribe at my late 17, or early, about 18 years old, I became a scribe.
Rabbi Druin told us that the work of a scribe has to be perfect. No missing or misshapen letters, no stray marks. I asked him if that responsibility weighs heavily on him.
Oh, very, very, very much so. And in fact, one of my early stories is a very dramatic story which put an imprint on me. In those days, I was living in Israel, wanted to travel to New York and visit the late Lubavitch Rebbe. It was a whole story how I wrote a Megillah and I was finally able to find a buyer. I'm in New York, and those who were training me, because to become a scribe, there's no school. There isn't a school, there isn't a college or a yeshiva that teaches the art of being a scribe. There's really only one way, and that's to become an apprentice and study under someone who's already been trained and ordained themselves. So I was training for a few months under others, and now they gave me the green light. I can go and write my first mezuzah scroll. The mezuzah scroll is that a little piece of parchment that has two paragraphs from the Torah that deal with the commandment, the mitzvah of writing a mezuzah, which we put on our doorposts, and it has God's name. It protects our homes. We kiss it on the way in and out. And to write a mezuzah scroll takes about an hour or two to write the entire scroll, and it's rolled up. It's a little 4 or 5 inch piece of parchment. So I was asked to write my first one. I was going to give it into a panel of scribes who were going to examine it. And if I did it correctly, I'd go for my tests and then qualify. And to cut a long story short, I wrote it. It took me a very long time. I checked it and rechecked it. Remember, cannot have any missing letters and everything has to be perfect. And after I was satisfied, I gave it to this other scribe to check it. And he calls me up a little while later and says, Moshe, I have good news and bad news. The good news is it looks like you've been writing for 20 years. It's beautiful. But the bad news was, he says, it's not kosher. There's a problem. And I said, a problem? What problem? He says, come and take a look. I ran over. He hands my scroll back to me, my mezuzah scroll. And I check it once, twice, and three times. And I didn't see anything. And then he points out that I missed a letter. You know, they say cowboys don't cry. I burst out crying. 18 years old, but it was very emotional because here I'm writing these scrolls for other people to put on their doors and to bless their homes, and it's meant to be something ritual and holy. And here, not only did I not see my mistakes, but I was pointed out that there was a mistake and I didn't see it. So I was distraught. But he put his hand on my shoulder and says, Moshe, you're going to be a good scribe. He says that, you know, the Torah was not given to angels who never make mistakes. It was given to human beings. And human beings, by nature, we make mistakes. So you can rest assured that you're like all of us. But there was one other element he pointed out. He said there's one other benefit that human beings have over angels. Angels, while they don't make mistakes, they don't have the privilege and opportunity to repent and to say they're sorry because they never made a mistake. Human beings have a quality that is greater than angels. They can say, I'm sorry. They can say, I'm going to try to fix this and repair it. He said to me, the fact that it bothered me so much is a good sign. It means that I'm really going to care about it. If I hadn't cared, he said, oh, I'll write you another one. He said, then I would have worried. So here I am, 36 years later, telling the story.
I wanted to know more about the Torah themselves. What do the scrolls actually look like? And do they all look the same?
The script, as far as the lettering and the words, all look the same. What is interesting is that over time and over years, there has slightly been different styles that have evolved in different countries. So one can clearly see a German style of script versus a Polish, surely different from a Russian. And if you bring in a Yemenite or a Moroccan, you're once again going to see a different style of handwriting. But as far as the text goes, the text remains identical. An actual Torah is usually parchment of a height of approximately 17 to 19 inches high. The length of it, while it's not a set amount because it really depends on how wide one creates those columns when making the Torah, but it's about a football field long if one had to roll out an entire scroll. And usually a scroll has about 42 lines in it. The width of the columns usually will range between 5, sometimes even as much as 7 inches wide. Certain parts of the Torah have to appear in the column at a set place, whether it's the Ten Commandments or the Song of the Sea or the blessing that Moses gave to the Jewish people right before his passing. Certain parts have to appear very strategically in different sections of the column as it's being written. So as a result, leading up to it and following it, the scribe has to make sure that he's counting the correct amount of letters in each line, that he fits it exactly into the place that it has to be.
But what about the scroll parchment? I learned it's not paper. And what does a scribe use to write?
The parchment really is skin from an animal. It has to be from a kosher animal. Traditionally and most common would be cow skin, which is ultimately converted over time. It takes a few months of treating the skin into becoming parchment, removing the fat, the fur, and so on, and stretching it to make it refined and durable. And then it's scored with lines. So when we write, we have somewhat of a guideline to be able to describe the letters. We always would have, as I mentioned, a script right in front of us from another scroll that we are copying from. And the tools that we use to write it is very simple and the same as it's always been. It's a feather. It has to be from a kosher bird. So it could be a chicken, a goose, a duck. We traditionally use a turkey feather. They happen to be the more larger and sturdy type of feathers, and we chip away and cut our own feathers to make them into feather pens. Back in the time before turkeys were very common, they would use reeds. And once again, cutting them into a reed fountain pen. The ink is brewed in a very special way. And in fact, it's one of those unique elements that are not found in any Judaica store, surely not in an art store. It's only a few families in the world who actually know the secret of how we make and brew the ink for writing Torah. While today one can Google the ingredients, but it's not only the ingredients, it's the quantities and how you mix it, which creates that secret of writing a Torah with that special ink.
With all the effort it takes to create a Torah, I wanted to know, how long can it last?
How about 200 years? And the truth is, a Torah, if preserved, should be able to last forever. The oldest scroll I personally worked on was a 750-year-old scroll. There was a place in Dallas that has one of these. It was written in northern Italy. And while the parchment, as you were looking at it from the outside, it was very fragile and, you know, frazzling at the top and the bottom. But when you opened it up, the ink, it looked like it was written yesterday.
Rabbi Druin told us that he's written about 18 Torahs, mostly as a younger man. These days, he's more focused on their restoration. A Torah used by a synagogue will need a repair once in a while, but some Torahs have been damaged intentionally when Jewish communities came under attack. During the Holocaust, the Nazis and their supporters ransacked hundreds of synagogues across Europe, setting them on fire and torching the scrolls. Countless were destroyed, but some survived.
So most of the scrolls in Poland and Germany and most other countries were burnt as part of the Shoah, as part of this Holocaust. There were individual scrolls that survived and were in Europe during the Holocaust and miraculously came out. But not many survived the actual Holocaust itself. There was one collection of scrolls, a miraculous story in Czechoslovakia, where a handful of Jews in Czechoslovakia, they dared to ask the Germans who were occupying Czechoslovakia at the time to go around all the little outlying towns and collect all the various scrolls that were lying in all the synagogues to be able to preserve them in the hope that if anyone survived, they can come back and collect them. And to their shock and disbelief, the Germans allowed it. The Jews who collected all these scrolls and they were documented where they came from, etc., all those Jews were killed, and all these scrolls went lost and went missing. It was only about 10 years later. It was an art dealer out of London. He got some wrong directions. He ended up in a room where there were over 1,500 Torah scrolls piled up. A treasure. Never in the history of the Jewish people with such a large number of Torah scrolls ever found. The Jewish community in London actually paid to release all those Torahs. They were brought to the Westminster Synagogue in London. And then eventually they created a trust to allow these scrolls to once again be used or at least be cherished by Jewish congregations around the world. And there's over 1,000 of these scrolls in the United States. And as a result, I get to see unbelievable scrolls, which are often hundreds of years old, that survived the Holocaust and now once again are being preserved and many even being used.
That was Rabbi Moshe Druin. He is the vice president of Sofer On Site, a Miami-based firm that sends Jewish scribes around the world inspecting, creating, and restoring Torahs. You can see pictures of Rabbi Druin at work on our site, www.interfaithradio.org. Coming up, we head to two full-time schools where students are taking part in a tradition that goes back to the 7th century, memorizing the 30 chapters of Islam's holy book, the Quran, one page at a time. We'll be back after the break. This is Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices.